right. Our final presenter today, Chelsea Darnell, Impacts of Neonicotinoid Resistance on Tobacco Thrips in the Mid-South.
Thank you for the introduction and good afternoon. I'm currently a master's student at Mississippi State University, and my name is Chelsea Darnell. And today, I'd like to talk to you about the impacts of neonicotinoid resistance on tobacco thrips, Franklinella fusca, in the mid-southern region. There are four thrip species that normally are found on Mississippi seedling cotton: tobacco thrips, western flower thrips, and soybean thrips. And as you can see, this chart, which y'all have seen several times today from previous presenters, shows that over 90% of the population of total thrips on seedling cotton are tobacco thrips. Even though this data is fairly dated, taken in the late 90s, it's still representative of what we see today. And the thrip on the far left is actually a tobacco thrip, and that's the one I'm going to be focusing on today, as I said previously. The thrip's life cycle is fairly short. It lasts approximately 16 days. The adult thrips begin by laying the eggs in the tissue of young crop cotyledons. These eggs usually hatch in about 4 days into larvae, and then the larvae begin feeding on the leaves. From there, the thrips either pupate on the plant or fall to the soil. Thrips usually damage cotton by using their rasping, sucking mouthparts to extract plant juices from young crop cotyledons. The damage can vary. Usually it can be changed by weather conditions, rain, cool temperatures. It really depends on the year as to how bad it's going to be, and the population, of course. It can result in leaf area reduction and plant height loss, to even loss of apical dominance or plant death in more severe cases. It really just depends on the conditions, as I said previously. In the past, Timic, or Outacarb, was applied as aerial granule for control of thrips. This was pretty much solely used back before neonicotinoids. But when they came into play, we began using them exclusively on all cotton. These same seed treatments are also used on soybeans, wheat, grain sorghum, corn, and rice. So as you can see, the neonicotinoid seed treatment are a widely trusted chemistry used by farmers for a variety of crops. This study was conducted on a farm in Starkville, and it's just showing you the importance of seed treatments. The middle way in between both of the green on the top and the green on the bottom is the place where we didn't use any seed treatments at all. So you could just see seed treatments are very important, and it's a key aspect in growing cotton. In recent years, producers have seen a decline in efficacy with thimethoxin against tobacco thrips. About 2011 is when we really started seeing this occur. This is a chart I wanted to use to show you when the resistance really started to occur, which is 2011. You could see the number of percent acres treated as well as number of applications increased dramatically up until 2014 or the 2013 growing season, and then from the 13 to the 14 growing season they decreased dramatically, which is where you see a wholesale switch from thimethoxin, which producers were saying that it wasn't working, so we have to find something that does control them, so they switched to Gaucho, which was a wholesale switch there, so it was a pretty dramatic drop. I don't have the 2015 data yet, but I can tell you it's pretty similar, where most farmers are still using imidacloprid, or Gaucho. The objectives of my study were to determine the LC50 values for tobacco thrip populations from both the Hills and Delta regions of Mississippi for commonly used neonicotinoid insecticides. And I also tried to estimate the frequency and severity of neonicotinoid resistance by comparing LC50 values from field populations to a long-term laboratory population. The sampling method that I used was fairly similar for collecting such a small insect. The thrips were usually collected off of crops, which, surprisingly enough, most of my collections were actually made off of soybeans rather than cotton. Usually cotton is watched so closely by producers because it's such a valuable crop, they tend to spray it before the populations have a chance to build up. So a lot of the crops I collected off of were soybeans. And wild hosts that could range from any type of weed along the edge of fields or in ditches or really anywhere. It was a wide variety of areas we collected from. And the plants, once I actually identified which plant we wanted to collect from, they were beaten against a white tray. And then an aspirator, which is the tube you can see sticking out of these gentlemen's mouths on the back of the tailgate, was used to aspirate the thrips into a 1.5 milliliter microcentrifuge tube. Normally about 50 per tube were put in there. We didn't want to be too crunched. And we also lidded that with a sugar lid, which ensured they had something to feed on. Then they were put in cool storage until we were back at the lab, and then they were placed on cabbage and reared in a warm chamber, or just a rearing chamber, until the day of the assay. Normally they were there for maybe 24 hours, usually less. We were pretty quick to get on the populations that we collected that day. For bioassay preparation, the cerevolutions were made from a stock solution. Normally I keep them a couple of weeks. I try not to let the chemicals stay in the refrigerator too long without using them. And the caps were prepared the day of the assay. What we would do is you could see the lineup of chemicals there, and we used an Eppendorf to put about 150 microliters or 200 microliters into the microcentrifuge lids. And then we put a thin layer of paraffin over the top, secured it with a ballpoint pen lid, and then folded the extra paraffin underneath the lids just to make sure there was no leak into the actual centrifuge tube itself. Bioassay method that I used was five thrips per microcentrifuge tube, five replications per dose. And you can see there's another picture of the aspirator here that we use. It's a fairly simple apparatus, but for collecting thrips, it was perfect. And the assays were also generally conducted within 2 days of collection, as I mentioned previously. Normally, we didn't leave them in the chamber very long. And once the assays were actually completed, they were placed in a growth chamber at 26 degrees Celsius or 80 degrees Fahrenheit, and the mortality was recorded after 48 hours. Once we emptied this microcentrifuge tube, we'd actually prod the thrips with a paintbrush just to make sure they were dead, and if they didn't respond, then we would consider them to be dead. So this is my 2014 data versus my 2015 data. So you can see imidacloprid for the hills. There was about a 4,000-fold increase for resistance from the 2014 growing season to the 2015 growing season. And for thymotoxin, there was also an increase in the Mississippi hills of 565%. And as we proceed down to the delta, there was once again an increase with imidacloprid in the delta by 1,300%. And with thymotoxin, once again in the delta, there was an increase of 425%. So as you can see, all these numbers and the issues with the resistance did increase from one growing season to the next. And this is a closer breakdown of the resistance ratios with imidacloprid or gaucho. In the Mississippi Delta in the 2014 growing season, there was a resistance ratio of 1.53. And then in the 2015 growing season, it was 11.44. And then in the Mississippi Hills region, the resistance ratio in 2014 was 0.69 versus 2015, which was 17.8. We do realize that the resistance ratio in the hills is higher than that of the delta, which is not really normally expected when you get resistance with stuff like this, when you have issues with chemicals such as these. But it's just something we're not really sure as to why the resistance ratio in the hills is higher than the delta. We figure time will tell. With thymotoxin, the resistance ratios for the 2014 growing season in the Mississippi Delta was 21.4. while in 2015, it was 355.2. And the Mississippi Hills, once again, we increased from 5.8 to 127.9. So we're all well aware of the resistance with thymotoxin. So it's just, it's going to continue to get worse. And I can assume at this point the numbers next year will be even greater. So in conclusion, in 2015, the susceptibility of tobacco thrips and imidacloprid in Mississippi was reduced. Resistance to imidacloprid and thymotoxin is found in both the hills, Mississippi hills, and delta regions. The numbers with both these chemicals were very sporadic. It was hard to find populations that actually fit the entire assays would fit very well. I did tested many more populations than what you see on the screen up there. It's just a lot of them just didn't fit the line. So the resistance levels of tobacco thrips against thymotoxin in Mississippi is increasing, as I said in the previous slide. And it really didn't matter if I collected the population off of weeds or a crop host. The LC50s were usually pretty much the same. So for the 2016 growing season, what can I recommend you do to protect your cotton? Well, at this point, I would definitely say to not use thymethoxin. We haven't been recommending that now for a little while. Imidacloprid, I would recommend it, but I would definitely say wash it. It's definitely posing a concern to all of the entomologists in the area. So I would probably back it up with orthane application or at least watch it very closely. Thrips can get a hold of cotton and they will tear it up before you ever, not really tear it up, but they will cause yield loss before you really know they're there. And imidacloprid and thiodicarb is also being recommended for thrips control. It's actually what we're recommending at this point, where it's a little more of a safer bet. So, special thanks to all the rearing lab staff with all these assays. They are my best friends during the summer season, and my advisors, Dr. Musser and Dr. Catchott, and fellow graduate students, student workers, technicians, and of course, this would not be possible without my funding from Syngenta and Bayer. So thank you all, and at this time, I'll accept any questions.
Chelsea?
Yes, sir.
Would it be fair to say that even though you saw a tremendous increase in the resistance, quote, based on good hope in the lab, that you did not see or hear that same type of level of efficacy type issues in the field?
Well, I can say this. I know that in some of my fellow graduate students' research, we've seen a little issues, but I do believe that I was seeing worse in the lab. I know there's some concentration issues and different things like that, but I would say it's not necessarily as bad in the field as I have seen it in the lab. Any more questions?
Okay, if there's not any more questions, let's thank our speaker.